Welcome to Just Ask, the podcast of the Hive Collective, a digital health platform built to empower women to make educated and informed decisions about their health. I'm your co-host, Dr. Heather Quayle, a leading women's and gender-related nurse practitioner. We provide answers to the questions you may not know how to ask by interviewing experts in nursing, medicine, sexual health, and wellness. We started in 2020 with myself and colleague Dr. Tara Thompson, pharmacist, and now welcome our co-host and leading women's health expert and nurse practitioner, Jackie Piasta. This is a safe space where no question is off limits, and we advocate and encourage listeners to just ask their most intimate questions and to break down the barriers of embarrassment and taboo.
I'm Jackie Piasta, your other co-host and fellow Queen Bee of the Hive. Each month, we bring on a new guest that is an expert and healthcare innovator in their respective field. As the healthcare landscape rapidly evolves, we are excited to be on the cutting edge and have decided to evolve the podcast into the Hive Collective, a space that seeks to equip you to better navigate your health journey. To learn more about our new and exciting platform, check out our mission, vision, values, and initiatives as we discuss our rebrand in Season 4, Episode 1. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. We're excited you're here and hope you enjoy our show.
Hi, everyone. It's Dr. Heather Quayle again coming at you this month, and we have an amazing guest on here today. Her name is Nicole Owens, and she is awesome over in the Mississippi area, and I just love her little Southern drawl, so that's fun too. But Nicole is a certified family nurse practitioner with the Division of Urology at the University of Mississippi Medical Center in Jackson, and it is the state's only academic medical center. She completed a Bachelor of Science in Nursing in 2007 at the University of Mississippi Medical Center, where she then worked for 6 years on a medical surgical floor caring for transplant and urology patients. In 2013, Nicole attained her master's as a family nurse practitioner, also from UNMC, and she holds current certification as a family and urology nurse practitioner and works in an outpatient setting with her division as the sole nurse practitioner. Sorry, I just lost my place on here. She sees general urology patients, but also focuses on the care of neurological conditions, such as congenital disorders like spina bifida and cerebral palsy, as well as patients with multiple sclerosis, spinal cord injuries, brain injuries, and stroke. She also treats bladder and pelvic floor dysfunction in men and women. And in her 7 years of practice, she found that many patients suffering from chronic bladder and pelvic pain and sexual dysfunction were not having their needs addressed. She's become very passionate about being a holistic approach to treat these chronic conditions while striving for the highest quality of life. She lives in Braden, Mississippi with her husband, Scott, of 4 years, is a mom to 2 fur babies, Cat, Ellie, I'll let you fix that if that was wrong, sorry, and a Chihuahua, Tebow. When not at work, she can be found volunteering in the community, riding with the music up and the windows down, trying a new recipe in the kitchen, or attempting to cultivate a green thumb or searching for the next big adventure. I'm so excited to have you, Nicole. So welcome to our podcast.
Thank you so much, ladies, for inviting me to participate in this. I'm super excited to be here too. And just glad to take part in a discussion about how we can equip and advocate for our patients that have questions that are not being answered.
Absolutely. I think one of the things that we really want to focus on, we don't do a lot of men's health on here. I'll be honest with you. We kind of talked to our token male who's come on here, Sean Hodges, who's a pharmacist in the past, but I definitely, just all the things that you're doing, I think one of the most important things that I continually want to highlight, because there's not enough information out there, is just around disabilities. You do stuff with disabilities, stuff that we never even see a lot as providers, or maybe that we're too scared to see because we don't know what to do with them. Things such as cerebral palsy and the spina bifida. So tell us what a day in the life looks like with nurse practitioner Owens and kind of how you navigate some of these things to be this amazing advocate.
Well, I practice by myself. I do have collaborating physicians, of course, that work with me, but my patients are mine in clinic, so I'm not assisting the provider. So I have a wide array of patients from general urology, but also ones that have congenital disorders or any type of neurological issue that's impacted their bladder function. And I kind of ended up with these patients being at the University of Mississippi. It's the only one that's an academic center. And as you said, a lot of providers in private practice are just not familiar or comfortable with the long-term needs of this patient population. And so I was specifically hired to come and be that bridge for anyone with congenital or later neurological disabilities to kind of help them through the chronic issues that come. So I see, in a day, there'll be multiple sclerosis, spina bifida for their yearly follow-up, patients that utilize catheterization, lots of infection issues, but there is also the hidden question that a lot of people are afraid to ask of, after I've experienced this spinal cord injury, what's my sexual life going to look like? Or my son with spina bifida is now 25 years old, and he wants to come in without mom present and ask these questions about, look, I've got a girlfriend now, and I'm wanting to date. Like, how can you help me in this area? So those questions do come up, and I've tried to train myself to be the one to ask the question, be their advocate to help them learn, this is important. If it's important to you, it's important to us. So ask those difficult questions.
Yep. And that's all part of what we are here at Just Ask, is because it's really easy to go listen to a podcast and maybe try to go back and advocate for yourself. Questions we may not feel comfortable with, talking to our provider. And part of it is because there's not a lot of people out there like you, Nicole. There's not people out there that are comfortable, that are even providers, on how to address that. So I think that's where a lot of the disconnect comes, is we may want to empathically help these people because we are providers, but we don't know how or how to find the resources. So I'd like to kind of talk, because our conversation really goes out to mostly lay people, but I do get a lot of students on here that listen to Tara and I, and we do get providers on here, somewhat like how to kind of navigate those questions, on how to be frank and upfront, and do we include it on our intake questionnaires? How do these topics come up? Does it start from the moment you're seeing them? I always tell my providers, put it on your intake questionnaire. It starts the conversation.
So we do have intake questionnaires that specifically address sexual issues and erections, things like that for men, and also on our all patient intake about libido, issues with pelvic pain, ejaculation, things like that. So say I'm seeing someone that's a patient with a chronic or new disability for the very first time. If they're just establishing care, I'll go through, these are the chief urological issues that I need to address for you on a routine basis. But this is also important, meaning your sexual health. And while we may not address that today as the number one priority, that's an important thing. And just because, you were born with this disability, or perhaps were injured in a wreck, it's not fair to say, oh, well, too bad, you just don't get to consider those things and have that experience in life. Like, those things are important. So we're going to address them in a future basis. And I've certainly had that talk, and patients were so kind of overwhelmed with everything else that we were having to discuss regarding their bladder care at the time, that they weren't comfortable talking about it. But opening that door, I have definitely had patients that came back to me and said, you mentioned last time that sexual things was an option on the table, and you weren't going to ignore that, and that really made me feel comfortable. So can we address that today? And I say, absolutely. And let's start from the top. So I think I would agree with included on your intake form, and ask the questions. I'll sit there with mom and dad in the room, or sometimes just the patient themselves. And I'll say, okay, real talk. I know we're diving right in to the very personal things here, but these areas fall under the umbrella of urology, and I want to help take care of that for you. So let's talk about it and ask any questions that you have.
So for my providers that are out there listening, what are some of the common questions they should be putting on every intake questionnaire, especially if they work with people with disabilities around sexual health in particular?
So, you know, we always ask just from a male standpoint, you know, are there difficulties getting or maintaining an erection? Do you have decreased libido for men and women? Do you have pelvic pain, vaginal pain, things like that? I've had, and we also have a very specific questionnaire called a SHIM score that calculates a score on kind of strength of erection and the quality that that patient feels with regards to their sexual encounters. And we can use that as a gauge to determine the effectiveness of whatever measures that we're using. That's a printed out paper that's included in every male new patient packet. I think a lot of patients, especially ones with disabilities that I call them graduating up from pediatric care, they have never had those questions before. I think pediatric providers may be a little bit more, you know, they'll say, oh, well, they're developing appropriately and everything is anatomically as it's supposed to be. But then they don't actually address the needs and concerns of young men and women in this area about not just how can we help you do this, but truthfully the safety of, you know, with any surgeries you may have had or other chronic medical conditions, should this be, you know, is it a concern for you? Is it okay for you to just barrel right ahead, you know, and explore those options? But we certainly don't want to put a damper on it and sweep it under the rug, as you've said.
Exactly. Right. And do you talk to them about how to talk to their partners? I know that it's already uncomfortable talking to your healthcare provider. Maybe we're breaking down some of those taboos, but oh my gosh, having a conversation with your partner, even when there aren't complications, that's hard too.
Yeah. A lot of my patients, especially in the spinal cord clinic, they will come with their partners.
Good.
And they will come and ask questions about fertility and the options of, you know, having children in the future. They'll come, and I'm really glad. I'm like, hey, it's so great to meet you. Let's talk about these options. And I make sure I address the partner's questions as well. I'm like, let's put all this out here. Sometimes the patient's by themselves, and I'll just encourage them to, you know, look, this is, if this is important to you, it's obviously important to your partner as well. And you need to try to foster that open line of communication, bring them in. If they have questions, y'all can call. I try not to say, oh, just Google or get on this chat room type of thing, because there's so much that can be given there.
But I love how you just dive into it, like with them, you know, because I feel like the hardest part for providers to talk to patients or patients to talk to providers is opening that initial door or opening that initial window, like you said. But once the window is open or the door is open, it can all come through. And I feel like it makes the elephant in the room, or it makes the situation just releases a little bit of tension. And I know for patients too, or people who are listening, like it would be such a relief if you were thinking about this in your head as a patient with spina bifida or something like that, thinking like, man, I really want to ask like sexual questions, but I don't know if this is the right spot. But then to hear your provider say, let's just throw it out there. Do you have any questions? You'd be like, yes, I do. I have a lot of questions. Thank you so much for asking. Like, it's a relief that, you know, they have a place to talk openly in a safe place to speak without, you know, any judgment or anything like that. So I love that you do that.
And I've definitely encountered patients that have been seeing other providers for a long period of time, and they never felt comfortable, or perhaps they kind of touched on the subject and the other provider just didn't address it for them. And you can actually see like a wave of relief on patients' faces when you ask these questions. And it may initially be embarrassing for them, but once the door's open, as you said, all the questions come. And I've, you know, told plenty of them, look, I'm not an expert and I don't have all the answers, but I'm someone that will listen to you. And we're not going to stop until we can find someone that can get you some help and improve quality of life. So that's definitely one thing I would recommend for any patient listening is seek out someone who's going to listen to you and not dismiss any questions that you have. There's no silly question because it's your quality of life and you dictate what that is. So find someone that will listen to you and be open. And make sure that they will be open-minded to explore kind of outside the box alternative measures that may be available to you.
Yeah. And that's what I was just going to kind of tap on is like, it looks different for people that want intimacy that are wheelchair bound or have a spinal cord injury and arousal sites are different and kind of
yes.
Having that conversation. I really want you to put that out there for people that it's okay to look at sex in or pleasure or arousal in more ways than penetratively. I feel like I spend my whole life saying
yes. That. Yes, I have specifically with spinal cord injury, you know, there's lots of different changes that can occur that are all specific to each person and the level of their injury, but you know, I've definitely encouraged couples counseling or even seeing a sex therapist or just trying to determine, it may not look the same way that it used to prior if it's someone who experienced an injury later in life, but there's ways to explore and find intimacy and connection that in ways that are different, as you said, not only penetrative, there are the nerves, my gosh, there are so many different ways that we can all find enjoyment. And it's not a shameful thing to want to continue to seek things because we're people and those connections are important. So.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And like you said, just kind of being that advocate to say like things are going to look different. You're going to have to try alternate things or bring different things into the equation and just having that very frank conversation with the patient, I think is so, so key. And I think that there's a lot that goes around their partners are terrified too. Like they don't usually come in that first visit. So they don't even know, like, is this a safe place? Can I talk about this? I think part of it too, is you're educating their partners as well. For sure. So you mentioned sex therapy. Obviously, we take a very biopsychosocial approach to anything that's sexual health related. When do you feel like sex therapy, do you use it with all of them? Do most of them need that brought on? And I want to kind of talk about pelvic floor too, but where does that sex therapy counseling piece fit in for them?
So I don't have a specific sex therapist that I refer to. I find a lot of patients are hesitant to consider counseling of that nature. And then also with you speaking about pelvic floor things, it's kind of, it's hard to get some people on board with it. So I always, you know, recommend, you know, look, there are professionals out here that can really offer assistance. And we can take it as far as you want to go. So, you know, I'll remind them, well, you know, you mentioned this is a concern for you. I'm not going to force you to do any of these things, but I want to let you know what treatment options are available and also bring it home that there's not just a magic pill that's going to just fix everything. The counseling and the mental and emotional aspect of it is very key. To your physical function. And then, the pelvic floor portion, my gosh, well, that's, I know y'all do a lot of talking about pelvic floor physical therapy, and I'm a big believer in that. So I do, refer patients often to pelvic floor physical therapy, both men and women. Not so much my patients that do have, chronic disability, but I do utilize that as well and just try to educate patients that, again, it's not going to be one magic pill and you go home and that fixes everything. You've got to be open to considering alternative treatment options that may take some time But if you're willing, there are people available that can help.
Yeah, I couldn't do my job without pelvic floor. I'm actually in a pelvic floor therapy office doing my job, my private practice job, because I feel like they're my right arm on a lot of things. You can't get a lot of the pelvic floor things better or optimal without their piece in the pie.
Absolutely.
I know, like, one reason that we sort of pull on for the podcast, one reason we pull on different sexual health experts, like sexual therapy, sexual counseling, pelvic floor. We want the listeners to know that this is almost a piece of the puzzle to healing. So it's not something to be weird about. You know, sex therapy, they don't watch you doing stuff with your partner. They don't talk to you about position. Like, it's not that. It's just
we always break down
yeah, like some of the patients that Nicole, you probably see, that are like, ooh, I'm not going to that, or I don't need physical therapy, you know. And it's just like, well,
yeah,
there's different types and they're designed specifically for your condition, and these people are trained professionals. And, you know, that's kind of one of the reasons we want our listeners to know, is that that's why we have other shows that have a sexual therapist, sexual counselor, and to just hear from them what a session looks like. And so if there's somebody mm-hmm. listening today that's like, ooh, I probably need to do that, or Nicole, one of your patients who's like, oh, I maybe I will go to sex therapy, they can listen to that podcast and kind of get like a day what that general session would feel like when they walked in, and realize that it's not some crazy like
and having them watch that. So I always say, go back through our podcast. We have some ASEX certified counselors on there to know what that looks like. We also have pelvic floor on our podcast too.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think half of what we do as providers is just educating again, like, this is part of the puzzle, just like you would do, just like it's very normal to have pelvic pain when you have a knee injury or an arm injury.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always kind of caveat it with, well, this is just pelvic floor for your genitals, just like you would for your arm or your leg. You have to kind of take out the thought of genitals and take out the taboo piece of it and think of it like your arm.
Yep. Yeah. And I was going to say, there are some, I guess, kind of uncomfortable ways where I've prescribed a medication treatment like injections or something like that to help with erections. And depending on if there's a neurological injury, that's a component of why there's erectile dysfunction to begin with. And usually I have to do some monitoring during that. So those patients will come into a special room, and it's kind of funny. We laugh about it. Their partner will come with them, and we've got a comfortable bed, and we go over the injection teaching. And oftentimes I'll have the patient or partner will administer medication, and I have to monitor their blood pressure to make sure they're not having abnormal response. So that I try to make it as comfortable of a situation as possible, where we're, you know, we joke and laugh, but we're talking like, you know, how are you feeling? What is this response for you? And making sure that it's as safe a space as possible to ask those questions. There's also, sometimes we'll do, like electrical stimulation to see if we can either trigger an erection or an orgasm response. This will be for spinal cord injured patients. And we have to do that kind of in a monitored environment as well, just making sure we're not causing dangerous side effects. So again, sometimes there can be, in a rehabilitation setting, a little bit more I would say embarrassing for them, but by this point, once we've talked about here's what we're going to do, they're very gung-ho and ready to explore those options that are available. So I do think letting them know the expectation of here's what sex therapy could look like, here's what to expect when going for pelvic floor, and then here's what to expect if you're coming in for different treatment training options from a urological standpoint.
So just mm-hmm. tell our listeners what that looks like, because I know they think electric stimulation, they're like, what the heck is that? And does it hurt?
So it's actually, it's a device that looks like, I'd say it looks like a straightening iron that has two small paddles on it. It doesn't deliver a shock. It's more of a vibration, and it's, I've only used it sparingly, actually, but I don't even think it requires a prescription. It's something that could be looked up, but it can help to determine, is the patient's nerve arc still intact? And if delivering this electrical stimulation can help improve with sensation, with erection, ejaculation, and climax. So it's definitely something that I would say discuss with your rehabilitation team or your neuro-urologist. But it's not shocking like patches and then we're pushing a button and you're like, oh, you know, jumping off the table or anything like that. It's kind of more the patient doesn't feel it as much. And we're just trying to stimulate those nerves to see if that can then produce a desired result.
I wanted to jump in from a pharmacist standpoint. I'm so glad that you brought up penile injections for erectile dysfunction, because one of our largest populations for men's health is those patients on penile injections for some sort of nerve injury, traumatic brain injury, spinal cord injury, something that has caused their erection to not, the blood inflow outflow is still fine. It's more of a nerve issue. And so I'm so glad you brought that up, because I've spoke with patients before who just thought that there was no help for them. Like, this was the end of the road. They're never going to get this back again, but that's not really the case, because there are definitely medications that, even if the nerves are damaged to where it's not sending the signal down to the penis to, you know, do what it needs to do. There are medications that can pull the blood in there and still get tumescence. So I'm so glad that you brought that up. That's so cool. And I want our listeners to know that even if this is you, there's help. Or if you know somebody who might think they're at the end of the road, as far as erectile dysfunction, they're not. So there's help.
There are lots of different options with regards to treating erectile dysfunction. And it kind of depends on what the causative issue is, on what is safe for them to use. But yes, it's don't give up if taking oral medications has not yielded the result that you want. And if someone sweeps you under the rug and says, oh, well, sorry, you just don't get to experience that part anymore, then find someone else to treat you that can give you these different options.
Advocate for your health.
Absolutely. And you talked a little bit about, before we wrap up, because I definitely want parents to hear this. You mentioned sometimes they go from these pediatric little places right over to you. And that's a really big jump to go from peds to the adult world now. Hopefully, I'm sure you are, but having parents advocate for their children and listening, and I know that's a hard conversation for parents to sometimes have. And what does that kind of look like? And how do you help them through that process?
So it's kind of when you meet any new patient, you kind of have to just gauge the situation, and you can kind of tell, is mom the take charge, do it all for the child type of parent, or is mom the trying to empower her child, adult child now, to be independent and do as much as possible. Sometimes the parent will ask the question, other times the patient will ask the question. I always just try to ask it anyway. And then I say, if you would prefer your family member step out while we discuss this, then that's perfectly fine, because this is still something that's important. If you want to wait until our follow-up visit, that's fine too. Because it's kind of a lot when we're having our first initial visit for transitional care from pediatric to adult urology, lots of things to cover regarding bladder and bowel function as well. But I always put it out there and say, look, this is important. This falls under my umbrella. You may not have talked about it before. You may have, but I just want to make sure that you don't have questions. And, sometimes the parents are uncomfortable with it, but once you put it out there, they will talk about it again when they come back, because you've opened the door. And if the parent is not supportive of that, then I try to you know, make sure I have one-on-one conversation with the patient themselves and be like, you know, look, I understand, or I've kind of got the vibe that your mom or dad wasn't comfortable with us talking about this. But it, again, if it's important to you, it's things that I want to discuss with you. So we just make the time for it.
And you're the one, I mean, you're the probably most qualified provider in their life to even, you know, talk about this with them. So, you know, yep. anatomy, you know, the, you know, diagnosis and issues and treatment. So yeah, this is, you're the one, you're the one.
I really wish there was more of you.
Thank you. Around the
country. So, so important.
Yeah, definitely.
For them to hear this. So how it, I mean, I know you're in Jackson, but how do people find you and get more information and all that other good stuff?
So I am on LinkedIn. Let's see. That would probably be the best way to get in touch with me. I'm not able to, you know, necessarily field specific questions from someone that's not necessarily my patient, but, I would say, you know, if you are a patient in this population who is transitioning from, you know, congenital urological care up to adult, especially if you're in a larger area that has a lot more academic institutions available, then there shouldn't be a lack of providers. But Mississippi is very rural, and a lot, I end up with patients that are traveling from 3 hours away trying to get here, and there's nobody near them that is remotely comfortable with addressing any of their urological needs. So I would just say to someone who may feel like, well, I don't have anyone near me, you know, look and do some research and see if you can find another provider. Maybe if it is even a few hours away, just to make sure that you can get your questions answered. I would certainly welcome anything via LinkedIn, or if there's a very specific question that either of you have or any other providers, I would be fine with contact information being shared from a provider standpoint.
Absolutely. No, I appreciate you. I appreciate the frankness of the conversation. I mean, I think that you are so empowering to so many people that listen to us and hopefully are finding some solutions in our podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We thank you so much, Nicole. You've been just, your transparency is so helpful. I know that there are so many out there who might be suffering from this or internally and haven't said it to anyone, but now they know that they can seek out help for that. So we really appreciate your time and your energy today.
Thank you so much. I'm very grateful and thankful for y'all inviting me to be a part of this podcast. And I hope, if nothing else, that we've kind of met the mission of this podcast, which is
absolutely.
don't absolutely. Be afraid to ask questions. And if you're unable to find a provider that you feel is open to hearing the questions that you have, then seek one out and find someone who will listen to you.
Yes, I think that's so true. I also have one more ask, and I'm going to start asking it on every one of ours. Tara's and my just ask is, please go rate us. Please go like us. Please go write and give us 5 stars if this is something that has been powerful for you or impactful in your practice or as a person. You can stay anonymous, but our just ask is to please go out there and like us and share us and rate our podcast, because that's what keeps us going and keeps us motivated and gets more people out there to see us. So thank you.
And thank you, Nicole. I hope everyone has a great day. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Just Ask podcast. And thank you for our amazing panelists today and every day. Feel free to contact us publicly or privately with your questions and thoughts. We do not provide medical advice, but we can point you in the right direction and provide resources. You can learn more about the topics we've discussed in this episode by viewing the show notes for this podcast and following us at Just Ask ATL on Facebook and Instagram. Our podcast is available on all of your favorite platforms, including iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, Google, Amazon, and iHeartRadio. Please make sure you subscribe to the show so you never miss an episode. If you found value in this discussion, please share this podcast with friends or leave a rating on iTunes. Thanks again for listening. We can't wait for you to join us for the next show.